The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Kevin Doyle is with me, Group Head of News at The Independent, and Wendy Grace, broadcaster and columnist. You're both very, very welcome, Kevin. I know you stopped at the portal on your way over here, the famous portal to Times Square, to somewhere on Fifth Street or Fifth Avenue in New York City. Well, what was it like?
I know, it'd be so much handier if there was a portal from the north side of Dublin to the south side. That would have saved me the walk in the rain. But the portal's back working. It was broken for a few hours there, which led to all sorts of conspiracy theories. But I can confirm firsthand that the portal is back working. I know mostly I come on here and I talk to you about things like deposit return schemes or bike lanes, and I'm generally quite cynical about all the things wrong. I like the portal.
Okay. What was happening at the portal when you were there now?
So,
on a rainy Monday afternoon.
I can confirm it's a rainy Monday, but it looks quite nice in New York.
Okay.
So there was, on our side, if you like, there was some girls there in ponchos. They must be tourists because Irish people would never have ponchos, obviously. There was a few businessmen and a few young lads, and half of them are on their phone taking pictures of the portal. So of the people in New York, they're randomly taking pictures. And the people in New York, half of the people in New York are obviously taking pictures back of the people in Dublin.
So no witty signs being held up?
No, nothing as interesting as that.
Not
today. But the reason I liked it, Kieran, is that in this miserable world and that miserable day out there, a few people just waved, and then the people on the other side waved back and they all smiled and giggled. And I was like, if it's that easy to get a laugh, like, it has to be a good thing.
I like the portal, Wendy. Do you like it?
I like the idea. I think it's a really nice idea, but I was really frustrated when I saw there was an article in the New York Post basically talking about all the kind of depravity that's been happening. People like flashing, kind of drunken behaviour, and it's playing into that, like, you know, drunken Irish kind of narrative. And then just some stuff that was just really stupid, like somebody holding a picture of, you know, the Twin Towers and flames. Things like that, that's actually kind of like, this is something that's meant to create kind of connection or a giggle, as Kevin said, and be something really positive. And instead, it's just...
You can't legislate for morons, though,
well,
at the end of the day. They're everywhere,
yeah.
Not just on Talbot Street. I'm sure there's people in New York doing stupid stuff.
There were
stuff
people
back
in New York waving potatoes, apparently.
You see, we'd laugh at that. That's okay.
But that was funny.
Yeah.
It's a strange one because, like, it's so universal. Like, on the New York side, there was a couple of kind of Wall Street types there in their full suit, their full rig out. And then there was kind
Gordon
of a load
geckos.
Of youngsters and stuff. Yeah, it's a real universal thing. Like, it's so stupid, but it does seem to work.
I think we should have more of them all
over
the city.
There's already been a portal proposal. Have you heard about this?
Oh.
Yeah, an Irish girl who
someone
proposed,
did it through the portal.
Through the portal. So she obviously, to her boyfriend who's in New York, she obviously said, come to the portal at this time.
Wow.
Which is quite
very progressive on so many levels.
In many different ways.
There was also a couple of guys who got deck chairs and sat out and were basically using their phones to try and get girls on the Dublin side to hold up their numbers so that they could call them, which I thought was, you know, quite a good way of getting a girl's
so
number.
This kind of like a very basic version of online dating in a way or something.
Yeah,
I don't know what
audio,
it is.
So you're just going on the visual.
Well, I saw somebody suggesting you could have some of those prison phones, you know, that you hold it up and there'd be a phone on the other side. I like that. I think we need
to step
it up a notch.
You need the Love Actually signs. You need
some sap will do that. Yeah. Has that happened yet? Probably not. So sorry, I'm intrigued by the proposal. So she told her fella at the portal.
Unless she
at a certain
was just
time.
Sitting, waiting, going, I know he crosses the portal at this time.
And she got down on one knee and proposed.
She got down on one knee and proposed. And
wow.
Presumably
and he just slowly blended back into the crowd in New York.
Hasn't been heard of
since.
I think he said yes. So
I could see people becoming a little bit addicted to the portal as well.
Yeah.
I was coming into work on, obviously, the Irish Independent offices are on Talbot Street. So we're just down the road from the portal. I was coming into work on Friday, which was the glorious sunny morning where I think that it hit 23 or 4 degrees, and it was scorchio. And then I looked and it was, I guess, 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning in New York. The street was completely empty and it was lashing. And I felt good about myself.
Did you? Good. I like that. Well, if it made you feel good about yourself, Kevin, I'm four square behind the portal. It probably has a few guards around on Talbot Street as well now.
That's the joke, but actually it's true, is that all we had to do was get a portal on Talbot Street and now we see guards around there all the time.
Yeah, put them. This is what the task force that David McRedmond
there
is chairing.
A
rollout of portals around the city and then guarding to protect them.
There's already been a portal arrest, actually. A young woman who was repeatedly dancing with said portal, and 20 minutes later, she was arrested.
Right.
so sorry it's radio and the people at home couldn't see those dance moves, Wendy.
Because
I can see how she got arrested if that was it.
Oh, burn, Kevin, burn. Anyway, listen, we might come back to the port, and I'm sure we will in some shape or form over the next few days. The smoking ban, let's talk about that. So the government are going to do what, Kevin?
They're going to move the age at which you can buy cigarettes from 18 to 21.
Okay.
They haven't fully explained, but it's going to have to be done over a period of time. So if it's not the case that if you're 19 today and you smoke, that they just go tomorrow, you're not allowed to buy cigarettes and you somehow have to go cold turkey. So there's going to have to be a gradual introduction period, I guess.
So it'll be 19 next year, 20 the year after, 21 the year after.
We're talking about into the late 2020s, if you like, towards 2030.
Because famously, most people out there wait until they're 18 to have a cigarette.
Yeah, this is, I guess it's about putting that little bit of distance between 15 to 17 is the most impressionable age, I think, for experimenting with these sort of things.
Yeah.
And what they're finding is after years of smoking dropping, it's now stagnating about 18%, which I thought was pretty high. Pretty much one in five adults still smoking. I would have thought it was lower at this stage. But the aim was, and this is kind of one of those things that, you know, governments do big announcements and HSEs and everyone else. We were supposed to be tobacco free by 2025, which is next year.
Yeah.
And we're still at 18%. Tobacco free means under 5% smoking. So we're well off that target. So I guess they're going to have to reset that. And this is part of that plan.
The New Zealand, I think every year when they go further, isn't it? They're going up incrementally every year, but they're not stopping at 21. They'll keep going. And ultimately, you won't be able to buy tobacco products.
Yeah, and I think it's the UK are proposing doing the same so that they're going to have, you know, a generation of people who don't smoke. It has had a difference in places like the States where they did the same. It's 21. And they saw a drop in the first few years around 30%. But I think you probably have to look at it on the whole, you know, in terms of obviously cultural element is the big thing. And like some countries ban smoking in some public places like playgrounds, beaches, different places like that. I hate seeing people smoking in the playground because I don't like my kids being around it or seeing it.
But I don't think you do see it. I think despite the fact that it's 18%, I don't think it's as socially acceptable to smoke even outdoors. You don't see people like on the sidelines of matches where they could smoke because they're outdoors, or in the playground having a cigarette where they are entitled to.
You have people blowing vapes in your faces though now. It's kind of moved to that. So do we need to in tandem look at...
Yeah, well, I guess that's the other aspect of all of this. I mean, the accusations of nanny statism will be writ large across all of this, Kevin.
Well, yeah, but there is... this idea, yeah, you're right. Of course, you can smoke if you want, but also it's a deadly product that's produced, and 4,500 people die from it in Ireland every year. So I think you're on a lose. How do you make the argument for letting younger people smoke? You'd imagine this is one of those policies that for everyone except the industry, the government is on a winner, because who wants their 15, 16, 17-year-old smoking? So if moving it to 21 makes a shopkeeper look a little bit more closely at the age profile, and I mean, let's be honest, a lot of 15-year-olds look about 20 nowadays. They've all got the beards and the mullets.
It's all that weight training they're doing.
And the weight training, yeah. There was none of that in our day.
We're also kind of pioneers in this area, so we'll be the first in Europe to do it. But when we introduced the smoking ban 20 years ago, you know, many other countries followed after us.
Yeah.
And at the time it was, how's it going to work? What's going to happen? Will people still go out? And it did work.
Because people follow rules. People actually follow. I remember that at the time when the smoking ban was coming. There was a suggestion that there'd be kind of a mass revolt or mass kind of ignoring of the rules.
We went on for about a month. I remember all the stories. We did them all in the Evening Herald at the time. Every time someone lit up in a pub, they were on the front page of a newspaper. It was a big thing for about a month. And some, do you remember some of the publicans tried to get around it by building like outhouses that were actually like fully insulated and just like had a little gap at the roof.
Oh yeah, the top floor was it O'Fuaylons in Kilkenny. I think they cracked a window basically in the top floor for a little while. Yeah. and a more robust smoking area had to be installed eventually.
It's basically one of the leading causes though of preventable death, so that's the reason why it's so important. And you have the Tobacco 21 Alliance, which is lots of different, you know, NGOs, think places like the Irish Heart Foundation, you know, organisations who support people with COPD, the Asthma Society, the list kind of goes on. So I think that, you know, the ripple effect is a really positive one. But cultural change does take time.
Well, do you suspect, though, Kevin, that this is the first step on the road to New Zealand, in other words, you know, that we, because like if the figure Wendy gives of, okay, a 30% drop by increasing it in the United States, like 30% of your 18% still brings us down to 12% smokers. Yeah. So you're still way above that tobacco-free target. And it's hard to imagine us getting there without going the whole hog and after 21 raising it to 22, 23, 24 and so on.
Yeah, I think you probably say 21 because we can all imagine that and it's a tangible idea. If you start saying it's going to 30 and people start to go, well, like, who takes up smoking at 30? Maybe one or two of your listeners have, but I wouldn't think very many people. I think that is that key age group kind of between 15 and finishing college where you possibly take up a cigarette. But I mean, changing the age is one thing. Last year, there were only 28 retailers prosecuted for selling cigarettes to under 18s. So,
and that's my memory as a teenager, handwriting the note, hands up, sorry, mom, if you're listening, to say, I like Wendy's mommy, will you give her a pack of 20? Okay, it's a long time ago, but it was
our school
was
principal, Lord Restham, used to send us to the shop to buy his tobacco for him and then smoke it in the classroom. And I'm not that old.
Glory days. Anyway, only in Ireland, we cannot enforce the 18 limit, but Abracadabra raising it to 20. Oh, sorry, but I think Abracadabra. Sorry, is it a Freudian slip there? Abracadabra.
That's fast food, Kieran. That's a different debate.
Fix it. The Freudian slip, I should say, was from me, not from Chris, the texter. He did write Abracadabra. Anyway, you would think we're in an election cycle. Mike and Athenry says, in school, none of my friends smoke because we're working so hard to get picked on a rugby team and smoking is for weak people. That's Mike's hot take. Anyway, 087 1400 106. Rosaline McGee says, I got to see my son and his wife in New York yesterday. It was such a thrill. It was lovely and the crowd were great. And John in Limerick says, the portal is another opportunity for gob you know what in New York and Dublin to bring us all into disrepute. It's pointless. So competing views about the value of the portal. What about the value of GAA Go? So I have to say I was surprised by this, Kevin, that Gareth Burns, I thought it was slightly undiplomatic response to suggest that the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach were electioneering.
Well, the first thing, Gareth Burns, great communicator. Compared to previous presidents of the GAA.
He is a brilliant communicator.
Up this morning the controversy over the weekend over the Cork Limerick match and the other games that are behind the paywall. I've never seen that before where the GAA president fronts up and worse still sticks it to the government. So that's actually almost as entertaining in some ways as the games themselves, because usually the GAA are very much, yes, government, we need this many millions. Will you help us out, please? So I thought it was kind of refreshing.
And it has worked well for the GAA, that approach. Which is why I suggest possibly this is undiplomatic. The Taoiseach since has released a statement in response to Gareth. So we've had the Taoiseach and Taoiseach weighing in, Gareth Burns' response, and now official statements from the Department of the Taoiseach responding to Gareth Burns.
Yeah, so it's a proper row.
Yes.
We're into proper row territory, which is fun in its own right if you're into sport and politics all wrapped into one. The tone of Gareth Burns' response, I think if you're the GAA fan who didn't get to see the match at the weekend, I'm not sure you'll have liked the tone of it in terms of saying makes no apologies that this is a commercial venture and in order to make it work, they have to put some good games behind the paywall or else, you know, there aren't enough. If they put Dublin Louds behind the paywall, would you have got seven people to pay to see that? Maybe there'd be a few hopefuls in Louds, but that might be the extent of it. So I understand the business proposition, but when you're arguing business against passion, which is what GAA fans, I'm not sure he's going to win the hearts and minds. Let's put it that way. He might win the argument, but he won't win the hearts and minds.
Yeah, he needs to do that, but you can understand the frustration in that, you know, he was saying, look, I spoke to the Minister for Sport, Thomas Byrne, last week. I asked him, was there any other kind of concerns around GAA Go? He said, no, it's brilliant, kind of go ahead. Obviously, there was a Oireachtas committee that looked at this. Surely that was the time to kind of thrash things out. So I think it's only when it becomes an issue again. But, you know, the thing is, it didn't seem to be as much of a problem when there was an exclusivity. So this is one of the issues that RTÉ has exclusivity. And this wasn't the case with Sky. So you might be able to watch matches in other places. That's one thing. And then the other thing is, if depending on where you live, you mightn't have good enough internet to even stream the service, even if you are going to pay for it in the first place. So it is excluding a lot of people. But I just think it's interesting that it's already been discussed at length and now they're kind of circling back.
Oh, it's becoming the new should the clocks go back debate. It's just going to come around every year and we're going to have the same argument every year.
Well, the three Cork games being behind the pay. I mean, that really, we might not be having this if they had spread the pain Which is exactly why the Tánaiste is releasing a statement. But you could, I would feel pretty aggrieved from a Cork point of view. I mean, the Munster Championship is where it's at. They could put as many games to the Leinster Championship behind it as we want. Although maybe this year it's going to be a little more exciting.
Should we mention Carlo's fantastic result, which was on GAA Go at the weekend? Or
I actually, would you believe I paid for GAA Go at the weekend?
To watch
Not to watch Kilkenny and Carlo. I paid to watch because I thought, sure, that's going to be a walk in the park. I paid to watch the other match, the Cork and Limerick match. And I was glad I did. I was camping down the glens of Aherlow and I was like, Wendy, remember when you were younger and there'd be owl lads on the beach with a kind of a hat perched on their head so they wouldn't burn the top of their head where their hair's gotten thin?
You're there.
And they'd be listening to the radio. I was like that, sitting in this campsite in the glens of Aherlow, everybody else enjoying themselves and I staring at my phone.
Watching the screen while you could get the signal. But you were interested in that, but the whole point of it's a national sport that you can't watch some of the matches on the national broadcaster. And it's really trying to encourage people who mightn't pay for it to encourage a love of the national sport. And the other thing is that I can understand the frustration of Jarlath Thorne, who's kind of saying, OK, we need revenue. Here's all the things we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So where are we going to get it from?
Yeah, I think it's worth about 4 million quid a year. Mm. I think they revealed before that at Oireachtas Committee. So I could see why they turn around and say, fine, we'll scrap it. We'll put them on YouTube. But where's that 4 million coming from? We're either our... It's the classic budgetary
central funding. Here we go again.
As in either we cut services or, you know, we increase taxes, tickets on the gate.
Yeah, look at it. People that are listening all across the country, myself included, we're supporting our local clubs. So much brilliant fundraising efforts goes on and all that sort of stuff. So I do think that call needs to be made. But the money does have to come from somewhere.
Would you dip cheese in coffee before you go, Wendy?
Well, it's bringing my two great loves together. Apparently, this is something that Scandinavians have been doing for years.
Right.
Yeah. When I first kind of heard it, I thought, no, I want to enjoy the separate pleasures separately. But I would give it a go. We should have done a live taste test.
We absolutely should. Kevin?
I neither drink coffee nor eat cheese, so I am absolutely wasted as an expert on this topic.
If you're wondering what I'm talking about, apparently there was a trend of dipping butter in coffee for a while. Oh, Wendy's all for that as well.
Yeah, I didn't buy it. I just kind of thought too much unhealthiness.
All right. Well, anyway, they were talking about it on Lunchtime Live. Andrea was the new trend, this Scandinavian trend of dipping cheese in coffee that has taken the world by storm. I'm going to stick with the portal and GA Go and things like that. Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News at The Independent. Wendy Grace, broadcaster and columnist. Thank you both very much for joining me. When I was in secondary school in 1975, the school had a smoking room for 5th and 6th years. So somebody else, John in Limerick says, focus, I've news for you, 15-year-olds buy contraband cigarettes. They're readily available in every village in Ireland. And John the Napper says, Kieran, in the 80s, my wife as a teenager was in Kappa Hospital for a few years. A teacher would come in every day. He said if they were good, he'd give them a cigarette at the end of the classes. She said the teacher would even wheel the kids outside in their beds and give them a cigarette to smoke. Like I said, glory days. John, thank you for the text. 087 1400 106.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.